Hello, everyone. Yeah, I could hear how quiet it was when I came in the room, and I thought maybe I shouldn't come in, you know, all excited because it might be like a bull in a china shop. Because you guys, I've never heard Cheryl so quiet, to be honest. Cheryl usually has this high dynamic energy, and she was so peaceful and so quiet. Very nice. I am here for the seven steps to awakening, and I'm going to be sharing from step two, beginning at number 254, which if you have the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, it's on page 54. The quotes that we're looking at are Sri Muruganar. For those of you who are in the room, what I will do is give you a link that goes directly to my journal. If you're listening on the radio, you can get to the journal entry for number 254 by first going to the web address RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, and when you get to RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, you want to click on step two, which is up on the menu bar, and then you will see the different numbering series. You want to click on the numbering series that will let you find your way to 254 and make your way to number 254. I like to start with silence usually, but right now I'm feeling a little differently. Maybe, you know, because you guys just had some silence. I don't know why. But I'm feeling instead to go ahead and play a song that I thought I would play last night and I never did. It's a song that many of you will know. It's a very popular Israeli song called Hallelujah. I did not play it last night. So what I'll do is I'll start by just playing that song, and that will kind of just be our entry, our meditation, and then after that we'll begin looking at the quotes. So let me get to Hallelujah here. All right, here we go.
Hallelujah, all over the land.
we go. So one of the songs, I actually had like three songs I wanted to play last night, but I only got to play one. That was another one, and maybe at some other point I'll play the other. But again, as I mentioned, we're here right now for Seven Steps to Awakening. We're going to begin with number 254, and I'm going to post the link again. I think at least Clara has entered the room since I posted it last time, and we are reading Sri Muruganar quotes. We are in step two, and the purpose of step two is to see that the body and the world and the universe are not real, that they are illusions. And one interesting thing happens for me. It's been happening for some time now. I mean, I don't know how much time to put on it, like a month or two. I would throw a month or two on it. But there's something that happens in my mind now, and I'm sure it's a result of step two. Where obviously I'm still living in the world. I mean, but there's something that happens in my mind as I'm living in the world. And I'm going to just call it a constant running reminder that nothing I experience is real. And, you know, sometimes when you say things like that to some people, when they hear that, they somehow imagine that it's depressing. In fact, I've heard some people even say that when they themselves began to have that realization, they found it to be depressing. I don't have that experience with it. It doesn't at all interfere with my laughter or my enjoyment of the experience any more than when I watch a movie and I know it's not real, but I still am able to fully engage in the experience. So I don't have any depression about it, but it's like this reminder that runs in my mind, like a background tape is a good way to describe it. You know, like no matter what's going on, this reminder is running. Yeah, I guess I just wanted to share that. Just share about that. I'm sure that's as a result of doing step two. Let me go ahead and read number 254. This is Muruganar. I'm on page 54 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. In the heart, the self that exists as the eye of grace, none of the worlds truly exists. In the heart, the self that exists as the eye of grace, none of the worlds truly exist. All right, that is Muruganar's quote. Let's go ahead and have a peek at the journal, shall we? All right, so number 254 in the journal, February 17th. Immersed in being, one finds nothing else. The idea that something other than being could be does not exist. One of the realizations that's been running in my mind in the last few weeks, again, just as I, you know, go about my day, just, you know, living what appears to be my life, doing what I would do, saying what I would say. I mean, outwardly, there's not much of a change at all. But as I mentioned, this tape, I don't know what else to call it, this tape runs in my mind, reminding me that it's not real. And the reason I'm pausing so much is because I'm trying to look at how to put this into the best words possible. The tape that runs, reminding me that it's not real, is very clear, very precise, and if I could somehow use this word, I want to use this word, but I don't want anyone to misunderstand it. It's very strict. And I don't mean strict in the way of like a strict parent. I mean strict in the way of there's just no leeway in it. I don't know how to say it. There's no leeway in it at all. So when it's reminding me that what I'm experiencing is not real. It's not only reminding me that what I'm seeing is not real and what I'm touching is not real, but it is reminding me that what I'm thinking is not real. And in fact, a lot of thoughts get dropped very quickly because once that tape shows up reminding me that this just isn't real, there's just no interest in continuing to listen to the thinking. It reminds me that my personality is not real. And the funny thing about that, at least it might not be what you expect, or it might not have been what I expected. Before, when I believed that the personality was real, I was actually more careful to control the personality, or at least to try to. So, like if I thought the personality was being loud at a time when she shouldn't be loud, or too quiet when she shouldn't be too quiet, or laughing too much when she shouldn't be laughing, or not laughing enough, or whatever, I would try and change it. I would try and keep it within appropriateness, within what was being deemed appropriate. What I find now is that, you know, as this tape is running, reminding me that the personality is not real, then I just allow the personality just to be whatever it's being in that moment. I don't judge it as inappropriate. It just is, whether it's being quiet or whether it's being loud and silly or whether, you know, whatever it's being, it's just being. So that the funny thing is, there might even be what it would be the appearance of a stronger personality, if that makes any sense. Or some people might say you're more comfortable being you now. That might be the appearance, when actually the reason it's allowed to be is because there's more of a realization that that isn't me. And when I thought it was me, I wanted it to be appropriate. Does that make sense? This tape that runs in my mind reminds me that this experience of consciousness, of beingness in a world, I guess I'll call it, I don't know what else to call it, being an experiencer, maybe that's the way to describe it, is not real. Being an experiencer is not real at all. And when you strip away, you know, the senses, the world in that way, you strip away the thinking, you strip away the personality, you strip away the being, the experiencer, what you get down to as the only thing that is real, the ego actually labels as death. But it's not death. But that's the ego's label for it. So the clarity that seems to come from the tape running in the mind is that this thing that the ego has always called death is not death, that that's beingness. That is beingness. And that the things that the ego calls beingness, like the I think, therefore I am type of thoughts, you know, I used to think, well, it's not that I think, therefore I am, it's that I have emotions, therefore I am, right? But, you know, there's all of these experiences that we say the experiences are beingness. That's the mistake we make. We say, because I experience, I am. And actually, beingness is before experience. And what I notice when I look at that realization, when these tapes are constantly running in my mind, reminding me how all experience is not real, how all experience is not real, like I said, my reaction is not depression. My reaction somehow is and able to enjoy it even more fully, no longer trying to temper it or make it appropriate. no longer worrying about it or trying to control it. But there's this subtle, subtle intuition, I don't know what else to call it, that knows that what I really am is in existence, whether experience is or not. That's the best way to say it. It's in existence, whether experience is or not. So the end of experience is not the end of me, which is why death does not exist, because the ego defines death as not experiencing. But if beingness goes beyond experiencing, then there is no death. And somehow, I can't explain this, but somehow that makes everything free. It's no longer bound. I don't know how to explain that. Everything is free. There's no limits on beingness then. Beingness is not limited to experience. So when this says immersed in being, one finds nothing else, it's not talking about being immersed in I'm alive experiencing. It's talking about before that. Immersed in being, one finds nothing else. The idea that something other than being could be does not exist. And in this sentence, it would be okay to say the idea that something other than life could be, the idea that something other than life would be death, right? The idea that death could be does not exist. Again, there's something miraculous in the realization that I am not the experiencer. Something miraculous that also says, in a way that I can't explain, therefore there is no death. I am not the experiencer, therefore there is no death. Death cannot exist. It can't exist because it's not limited by experience. Beingness is before that and more than that. Let's go on to number 255. If you're in the room, you can just scroll down, or if you're in the journal, you can just scroll down and click on number 255, which is on the left underneath the comment section. I think everybody in the room is probably in the journal if they want to be, but I'll go ahead and post the link again. And then we'll read Muru Ganar's number 255 comment from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Ignorance will not be eradicated except in those who, through the power of self-inquiry conducted assiduously within the heart, have attained the victorious absolute vision in which the whole panoply of manifestation is transcended, being seen as a mere cinema show. Yeah, Muru Ganar was smarter than me. So you know what I'm going to do, because I want to be real clear on this, and he is using words that I think I know what they mean, but you know what, I'm not 100% sure. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up dictionary.com, and we're just going to look at some of these words. I do that not all the time, but frequently when reading the seven steps. I feel like I want to get real clarity on why these words were used. I mean, you just heard me trying to very carefully select words in order to communicate, and there's an assumption that they are probably doing the same thing. So the first thing I'm going to look up is assiduously. If I can type. Assiduously. Okay, got it. All right, assiduously. Continuous, tireless, persistent. So he says, ignorance will not be eradicated except in those who, through the power of self-inquiry conducted assiduously, right? Constantly, right? Tirelessly, persistently, unremittently, within the heart, have attained the victorious, absolute vision in which the whole, I don't even know how to say this, panoply, P-A-N-O-P-L-Y, let me look this word up. This word means wide-ranging and impressive array or display. Wide-ranging. So until the, until they have attained the victorious, absolute vision in which the whole wide-ranging and impressive manifestation is transcended, being seen as a mere cinema show. All right, so that's the gist of the Muru Ganar quote. And it's kind of interesting that we would come upon this quote right after I finished telling you that I have this tape running in my mind reminding me that nothing I experience is real. And again, it doesn't temper the experience. It actually allows the experience to go untempered, unmonitored, unheld back, right? But it's continuously reminding me that it's not real. Let's look at number 255 in the journal. It says, this is a request for happy, surrendered commitment. Surrender to the heart by being established in the practice of self-inquiry and self-watching until the illusion that anything else could exist or be has died completely and only knowledge of reality remains. Now, what's interesting about what's happening to me is, I don't know if you would exactly call it right now self-inquiry. It's not the question, who am I, you know, which is an inquiry, right? A question. It's not the question, who am I, that's constantly running in my mind. It's more of an, it's more of a constant reminder that's running in my mind. So it's not really an inquiry, but you could probably call it, it's the self-watching. It's keeping my attention, that subtle, subtle, intuitive attention on the fact that all experience, every degree, every level of experience is not true. And that what is true, what is self, is that which is not at all dependent on experience, which is why when experience ends, it doesn't die, right? Because it's not at all dependent on experience. But the interesting thing is how much that runs in my mind. It's not anything, as I mentioned, that you could observe. It's not anything that you could see. And yet it's there. It's just there. I can't say 100% of the time. I'm sure there are times when I do get fully focused on the world and maybe it's still running, but I'm not paying attention to it. But I think that I would be very fair if I said it's running in my mind at least where I'm consciously aware of it at least 70% of the time. That's probably pretty fair. And so as a result, what it doesn't do is judge. That's one of the cool effects of it, is that it doesn't judge. It doesn't judge what I say or do, or it doesn't judge what anybody else says or does, what anybody else says or does. It doesn't judge because somehow the awareness of the unreality puts the happening outside of the realm of judgment. Judgment comes from the belief that it's real. Judgment and real go together. So everything is allowed to be as it is. And that's why for me, like I said, it's not depressing. It's actually happy. It can be enjoyed like a cinema show. So this is a request for happy, surrendered commitment. Surrender to the heart by being established in the practice of self-inquiry and self-watching until the illusion that anything else could exist or be has died completely, and only knowledge of reality remains. And the sense that I'm having right now is that the knowledge of reality is like a blowout. A blowout. Because when that knowledge fully occurs, or that remembrance fully occurs, there is such an incredible experience that is beyond experience. A knowing that is beyond experience, that it's like a blowout. It's like a big blowout. That's just the sense I have right now. So let's go ahead and move on to number 255. So if you're in the journal, we're going to move on to 256. If you're in the journal, you just scroll down and you'll find underneath the comment area on the left a blue 256. If you've just entered the room and you want to join us in the journal, I'm going to post a link into the room which you can click on. I'm going to take a drink of water, and then we'll read Muruganar's quote first from the book The Seven Steps to Awakening. Here is Muruganar's quote. The infinite variety of false and treacherous modes of existence are merely brightly colored images appearing as if in a mirror. We must realize that the false and treacherous identification of the I with the body is the seed from which these appearances arise to ensnare us, and we must reject it with disdain. I read this quote, and I don't think that the ego is supposed to read this and learn this and then try to do this. If at the ego level I was walking around denying my experience, I think that I would be stupid, if you don't mind me saying that. Denying my experience at the ego level, maybe we've all gone through this, I won't call you stupid, I'll call it foolish phase, where, you know, maybe we're experiencing a headache. And at the ego level, somehow we try to deny in ourselves that headache. We might even be embarrassed about the headache. We might think we're bad to have a headache. Something's there that's just not right about the way we're trying to not look at the headache, right? So when he talks about rejecting the body's experiences, I don't feel that he's speaking to the ego. And in fact, this tape that I told you that's running in my mind, which would tell me, would remind me that this is not real, it's not coming from the ego. It's very gentle. It's non-judgmental. And the funny thing is, it doesn't prevent me from taking aspirin, because the aspirin are no more real than the headache. The whole experience is like a movie. That's just the best way to describe it. The reason that we temper or adjust our behavior is because we believe it is real. When we don't fully believe it is real, we allow the cinema picture to just run. There's a back offness from it. It's a stepping back rather than a trying to control it. A stepping back rather than a trying to change it. So what's rejecting experience is not the ego. What's rejecting the experience is actually what A Course in Miracles would call the Holy Spirit within us. Which means it's almost like the experience of the rejection happening for us through grace. That's a great way to put it. The rejection of the experience happens for us through grace. So again, Murugunar said, the infinite variety of false and treacherous modes of existence are merely brightly colored images appearing as if in a mirror. We must realize that the false and treacherous identification of the I with the body is the seed from which these appearances arise to ensnare us, and we must reject it with disdain. Okay, let's read number 256 from the journal. What does attachment to body have to do with attachment to mind, and therefore illusion? It is a simple triad. Attachment to body implies I am vulnerable and need protection. Mind responds by answering, I am your protection, as it spins its threat and protection stories. From those stories, the entire illusory world is formed, and the perception, I need protection, continues. To be free of this cycle, do not accept the idea, I am the body. Practice self-inquiry and self-watching in order to firmly awaken awareness of self. So I was just looking back at the experience of when I used to want to deny a headache, for example. You know, in denying a headache, the question is it true that when I wanted to deny a headache, is it true that it's because I believed I needed protection? And the answer is yes, that is a true statement, because when I wanted to deny a headache, that's because there was, first of all, there was still the firm belief I am this body that had to have been in place. And then there was the belief that if I was somehow good, like a good core student, that I, the body, would not get a headache. And of course, I don't want to be perceived as bad, so the denial of the headache was trying to protect me from perceiving myself as bad. Do you see? But this tape that runs in the mind that's constantly reminding me that everything is not real, again, it's not just telling me that the world is not real. It is telling me that my thoughts are not real, the personality is not real, the emotions are not real, nothing experienced is real. And like I said, it's more like a backing off from then. It's a backing off from... Well, it's a backing off from the belief that I am the body, or that I am the personality, or that I am the mind. It's going back before all of that. So if I am not the body, then why should I be ashamed of a headache? Without the identification, there's no judgment of the headache. It's a cinema show. And in fact, as we back off more and more and more from the identification, we have that subtle intuition about what we really are, we realize that that has no headache. You know, just like the person in the audience watching the cinema show isn't getting wet from the rain in the movie. So the identification that I am the body implies I'm vulnerable and I need protection. And then the mind responds by giving us ideas on how we can protect ourselves. And some of those ideas are very hurtful ideas. For example, although it's saying it's going to protect us, right? Very hurtful ideas like the inappropriate denial or the repression of our experience, denial at the ego level. You know, but the reason we do that is protection, or because we're listening to what the mind is telling us is protection. But as we back off from the idea I am the body, back off from the idea I am the mind, back off from the idea I am the personality, back off from the idea that the world is real, that experience is real, then there's this subtle understanding that what I am is that which cannot be threatened. Therefore, I am not vulnerable. I do not need protection. And everything that is unfolding in the script can be exactly as it is. Headaches can happen. They can come and they can go. Just like the rain can come and it can go in the movie. It's irrelevant. It does not affect me. That's why it says to be free of this cycle. Do not accept the idea I am the body. Just like you're not affected by anything in the movie when you're in the audience. You're free of the cycle of whatever's happening in the movie. You know, today we went to a movie and we saw, you know, a very big, dangerous bear attacking people. We were free from that, right? We weren't at all involved in that. We were just in the audience. And we had no need to try and change what was happening in the movie. Of course, as I hear myself saying this now, I realize I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before. I mean, you know, Ramana Maharshi said this. Ken Wapnick has said this. You know, it's been said probably somewhere in Disappearance of the Universe. I read that book a long time ago, so I don't know for sure, but I just kind of have this feeling that it's probably in there too. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before. For me, the only difference is that because of the tape that's running in my mind, this being in the audience, instead of thinking I'm in the show, is becoming a current experience, for lack of a better word. I don't think there is another word. The not being experience is becoming the experience. So that's the only thing that's different. The only thing that's different is I'm not reading this somewhere, someone, no one's teaching it to me. I'm realizing it. But I just sound like everyone else. There was another teacher recently who is also, it looks like he is also at a point of seeing that he's beyond experience. And when this first started coming to him, when he first started having these realizations, he was very excited because, of course, it was all new for him. And he started, you know, telling lots of people about it. And one thing that was really interesting to me were the reactions when he would tell people about it. He had been a teacher before, and he had many, many followers, and a lot of the followers literally began to drop away. And they began to say, he's turned a corner. He's lost it. He's not clear anymore. Because what they want to hear that they want to hear that the experiencer is real, but the experience is only good. And that's kind of what he was saying before, because that was his experience, that the experience is only good. And now he's saying, wait a minute, I'm not the experiencer. Experience isn't real. And they're saying, wow, he's don't listen to him anymore. But I was so happy when he started talking that way, because I was beginning to have that exact same experience. That experience of experience is not real. I wish I had another word, because it sounds so contradictory, but I don't have another word. Realization. I could use that word. Same realization. And I was so happy to see him saying the same things. In fact, some days his posts were so much like mine, even though I know he wasn't looking at mine. I don't think he even knows he does know I exist. He does know I'm here, but he would never go and read my stuff, right? His posts were so much like mine, sometimes they were even using the same words. And then, you know, as he was continuing and people were continuing to criticize him, one person showed up kind of in his defense, although I don't think the person felt defensive, to be honest. And the person just said, hey, he's not saying anything that hasn't been said before. You know, Buddha said this. He called it nirvana. And what the guy just very clearly pointed out is he's just realizing what all great masters have realized. We are beyond experience. And so that's why I say what I'm saying, it just sounds like the same old stuff, because you know what? Truth doesn't change. The only thing that's different from my perspective is that it's now becoming something that I somehow know. And that is freeing. In fact, when people say that as they begin to realize they get depressed, I'm wondering if there's a part of them that's still wanting to be the experiencer or something. There's still an attachment there that would cause it to be depressing, a depressing realization, because my experience is it's not depressing, it's freeing. And everything can be as it is, and judgment drops away, you know, you can enjoy the movie knowing that it's not real and that it's not going to last. So what does attachment to body have to do with attachment to mind and therefore illusion? It is a simple triad. Attachment to body implies I am vulnerable and need protection. Mind responds by answering, I am your protection, as it spins its threat and protection stories. From those stories, the entire illusory world is formed, and the perception, I need protection, continues. To be free of this cycle, do not accept the idea I am the body. This is the backing off that's happening. Practice self-inquiry and self-watching in order to firmly awaken awareness of self. And maybe that's what's happening to me. Maybe that's what that tape is that is running. Maybe that's awareness of self awakening. And right now I experience it as just a gentle reminder running in the background like a tape. Not changing anything. Not telling me to behave differently. Just reminding me that it's not real. All right, let's scroll down underneath 256. On the left, you will find number 257. And I think maybe Jay entered the room since the last time I posted a link. Francine, you know, Joe, Black Boy, I think I used to know who you are. Now I have forgotten. Your name is, does your name start with an R? remind me of who you are if you feel like it so I can put that name with that handle again. But here is 257. And I'm going to go back to the book and read number 257 in the book. Again, this is Muruganar. It is indeed pitiable. He does use colorful words, but then so does Jesus in A Course in Miracles. If you read A Course in Miracles, you know, Jesus' language can get quite dark, and it, you know, and Muruganar, you know, kind of runs the same way. It is indeed pitiable to spurn, forfeit, and lose the treasure that consists in dwelling thought-free within the heart on account of the vacillating mind that dwells upon the world dream generated by the treacherous senses taking it to be real. I'm going to take a drink and then I will read that again. It is indeed pitiable to spurn, forfeit, and lose the treasure that consists in dwelling thought-free within the heart on account of the vacillating mind that dwells upon the world dream generated by the treacherous senses, taking it to be real. So again, he's saying it's sad. What number am I on? 257. He's saying it's sad that you have to suffer with the mind's stories because you believe the world is real. That's what he's saying. It's sad that you have to go through that. All right, let's look at number 257 in the journal. Which is wisdom? To listen to the mind which pays attention to the world as if it is reality, or to rest peace-centered in the heart without a thought for the world? If one is not clear on the answer to this question, try asking it again this way. Is it wisdom to sit peacefully amid calm waters and still beauty? Or is it wisdom to run frantically, chasing shadows desired while hiding from shadows feared? You know, money is a good topic here, because as long as we believe that we're a body and we believe that the world is real, unless we're a rare, I mean, there are some rare, you know, people who believe in the body and believe in the world who still don't feel they need money. There are those rare people. But for most of us, as long as we believe I am a body and we believe the world is real, we also believe as money is something we need. You know, because money is, it's our security. That's what it is. It keeps us safe. We're vulnerable, and if there's the only thing that keeps us more safe than money is the mind, we think, but we probably don't even acknowledge that connection, that attachment. The only one we might really acknowledge is money. You know, and if my husband supports me, then he's pretty damn important. You know, whatever gives me that sense of security is real important. But something strange has happened to me in that although I still earn money and spend money, I don't believe in money anymore. It's odd, actually. You know, so spending happens. Things show up that need to be fixed, or, you know, we're going places and we spend, or some kind of a charity will come into my awareness that needs to be given to, or, you know, the spending happens. But when I used to really believe in money, there was always this thought about, can I afford to spend this? You know, there was a looking in some way to make sure there was enough money in the checking account to cover my expenses, you know, that I knew that I had. And then if it looked like there was some left over, then it might be given to charity, or it might be given to an extra spending that isn't necessary, right? What I have found, and this has been going on for over a year now, this is not new, but what I have found is that the spending happens and the earning happens. I mean, money comes in too. Money comes in and money comes out. Money flows. Money comes in and money comes out. But the sense that it all fits together, the sense that the same amount that comes in as goes out is somehow lost, it feels like, it feels like somehow I spend way more than what comes in, and yet I always have enough. That's the sense. That I'm giving out more than logically I could say comes in, and yet somehow I always have enough. It's like I turn around and I look and I say, where did that $1,000 come from? You know, it doesn't make sense to me that there should be $1,000 there, because I just spent this and this and this and this. You know, where did that come from? It doesn't even make sense anymore. And Barb is saying trust, and that is definitely how it started. Now it's not even trust. Now it's amazement. It's just like, and a knowledge that it will work that way. So the question is then, what is wisdom? Is it wisdom to either trust, if that's the stage you're at, or know, if you've got enough there to know it, to just know that money isn't something you have to think about, and therefore you still do your job and you earn what you earn and you still buy what you buy and you still pay bills and you still give to charity and all that still happens, but there no longer needs to be any thinking about it. It just happens. It's just this miraculous flow of everything fitting together, right? Or is it wisdom to constantly be worried about every penny? Which is wisdom? That's the question. Let it naturally be, because you know what? My experience is that's what it does. It naturally bees. Again, I'm not saying that doesn't mean we don't work. I work. I have a job. My job is running the foundation for the Holy Spirit. I get a salary. You know, I'm not saying, you know, we don't work. I'm not saying that we don't earn. I'm not saying that we don't pay bills. I'm saying that somehow it all just happens and we don't have to think about it. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to stress about it. We're adding that on top of something that's just going to happen anyway. If we change jobs, we're going to change jobs, right? I mean, it's all going to happen anyway. We can just watch it like a cinema show. We don't have to be freaked out about it. It doesn't have to cause us any emotional suffering. And, you know, that's what Muru Gunnar is saying in this quote. He's saying it's really, really sad that you have to suffer over the world because you think it's real. That would be like if I'd been sitting in that movie today watching those men fighting that bear, and I'd been terrified for them and screaming for them and saying, somebody help them, they need help, right? I didn't have to do that. I could just sit back and watch them fight the bear. You know, whether they won or lost, I can still just sit back and watch it. He says, it's really sad that you suffer because you believe the world. You don't have to. The world can keep right on happening, and if you don't believe it, you won't suffer. Again, number 257 in the journal, which is wisdom? To listen to the mind, which pays attention to the world as if it is reality, or to rest peace-centered in the heart without a thought for the world? If one is not clear on the answer to this question, try asking again this way. Is it wisdom to sit peacefully amid calm waters and still beauty? Or is it wisdom to run frantically chasing shadows desired, while hiding from shadows feared? And I'll tell you also, I remember, you know, because this was a transition period. I mean, obviously, I totally believed in money before. So this was a transition period for me. And I can tell you one of the things that helped me on, like, the first step of the transition, not just about money, but about anything in the world, about worrying about things working out okay, just that in general, is I started noticing that 90, 95, maybe 98% of the things that I worried about going wrong, even in form, they didn't happen. I'm not saying that nothing ever, if I was to judge it by what I want, what I don't want, nothing ever, quote, goes wrong, because sometimes the car breaks and when you didn't want to spend the $400 getting it fixed, or sometimes things do happen, right, that maybe, you know, when we're totally caught up in ego and what we believe is good for us and bad for us that we don't want. But even totally caught up in ego, believing that certain things were good for me and certain things were bad for me and there were certain things I wanted and certain things I didn't want, 95 to 98% of the things I worried about never occurred. What a waste of energy. Why suffer? Why put ourselves through that? Did anybody else worry during the anthrax scare? Were you ever anthraxed? You know, we worry about stuff that never happens. So I began to see that even if the world is real, even if I am the body and I'm vulnerable, it still didn't make sense to worry. That was the beginning of the end of worrying. I didn't have to even have faith that I am not the body. I didn't even have to have faith that the world is not real to see that worry doesn't make sense, because so much of it is wasted suffering. And the thing worried about never happens anyway. So which is wisdom? And I'm willing to say, even if we are bodies and even if the world is real, which is wisdom? You know, to listen to the mind, which has all of these fear and worry stories about what might happen someday, or to just rest peace-centered in the heart? Or we could ask it this way. Is it wisdom to sit peacefully amid calm waters and still beauty, or to run around frantically chasing shadows that are desired while hiding from shadows that are feared? Remember, Muru Ganar says it's sad that we suffer when we don't have to. What do we think about that? Do we enjoy suffering so much that the next little worry thought that shows up, we're just going to go with it? Or are we willing to, in whatever way we can, look at that thought? I mean, again, literally for me, I remember this. When I first started down this path of letting go of worry, I literally remember I sat down in my journal. Y'all know I've been a big journaler. I sat down in my journal and I wrote down everything that I could think of in the last few years that I had worried about. And some of them I worried about extensively. And in that situation, when I wrote down 10 or 15 things that I had worried and worried and worried and worried about, I looked, not one of them had actually happened. It was just made up suffering in the mind. So think about that. If you still worry, if you're still addicted to worrying, go ahead and look at that. Say, how much of what I worry about happens? I mean, okay, so maybe 2.5%, maybe 5% of it happens. And then you deal with it. But was that worth all of the worry about the other 95% of the things that never occurred? Well, I think that I don't really have time, of course, to go on to the next one. Hello, Jamie. Jamie wants me to quit teaching now. I don't know what it is about Sunday nights especially, but it seems to me that Sunday nights especially, she continually asks me to stop teaching. I don't know. I guess she thinks Sunday evenings are Jamie time. I don't know what it is. But I don't think I have anything else to say, and she wants me to get up. So I think I'm going to go ahead and just let go of the mic a minute early. I will be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and we'll continue with number 258 then. I guess if I leave you with anything, I just want to say, really, if you do still worry, please think about what I just said. Because as Muru Ganar says, it's sad that you're suffering when you don't have to. And it really doesn't make sense, especially since you're not a body and the world is not real. But it doesn't even make sense if you are a body and the world is real, because the majority of what you worry about is never going to happen. It's a waste of energy. All right? Have a good evening. Bye-bye.